Greetings to all of our listeners. I'm Congresswoman Marcy Kaptur representing Ohio's 9th Congressional District. Today, we're going to explore the concept of liberty. It is every American's birthright to be free, a status of living passed on to us from previous generations. Now, the word liberty is derived from a Latin word, liberare, meaning to be freed from. Liberty does not have the same meaning as freedom. Think about that. To be freed from what? We'll talk about that today. Now, our region in Ohio was settled by Native Americans and then immigrant people from all corners of the earth. Some came seeking freedom and opportunity, and some came forcibly as slaves. It is important to be aware of your own heritage, to appreciate those of others. The people of our region love to celebrate and learn about family heritage. In so doing, we all come to understand more about America's unique history of settlement. By learning about the history of others, you, all of us, come to a greater appreciation of the meaning of liberty itself. And our national motto, E Pluribus Unum. Again, Latin words meaning making one of many. The richness and diversity of various cultures and traditions make the United States a nation where one can say we celebrate the valued variance of our common humanity. Today, I'm in Washington recording this broadcast and am privileged to be joined by two distinguished supporters of liberty who share our political values. They represent their nations very ably here in our country's capital. The ambassador to the United States from Estonia, Christian Preek, and the ambassador to the United States from Belgium, Ambassador John Artur Regibeau. Gentlemen, welcome. We are so honored to have you on this broadcast today. And I thought we might begin, because I would guess that most of our listeners have never visited your countries. Tell us a bit about your own backgrounds and what influences in your own life have caused you to work in the diplomatic field. Ambassador Preek from Estonia, let's begin with you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Congresswoman. And greetings to all the listeners in Ohio and elsewhere in the United States or globally. My name is Christian Brick, as it was said, and I come from a country from northeastern part of Europe. The country is called Estonia. It's bordering Russia to its east, and we are along the coastline of the Baltic Sea. So across the sea, just 50 miles from Estonian capital, is the capital of Finland, called Helsinki. I grew up in Estonia during the 1970s, 1980s, 1990s. But Estonia was a very different country back then. Up until 1991, Estonia was occupied and annexed by the Soviet Union. And so I grew up behind the so-called Iron Curtain during the period of time that is called the Cold War in history books. And the world for me and my friends, my family, was very different from today. We literally were behind the Iron Curtain, meaning that even the idea of, for example, traveling to the United States, to Belgium, or other parts of the free world, were just a dream for us. We knew that this could not actually happen. That this was prohibited for us. We didn't have the freedoms and liberties that people here in the United States have enjoyed for hundreds of years. We didn't have the freedoms or liberties that we luckily today have. And this particular experience also created this yearning in me to actually study international relations, to understand better other countries in the world, but also to represent my country in other parts of the world and tell my country's story, so to say, to find more and more friends across the globe, because no country ever has too many friends, and small countries, I'm sure, understand it very well. So this is shortly put my story, and I'm glad to discuss any issues further. Thank you.
I want to thank Ambassador Preek. If you get to know him a bit, you can see in his face as he speaks, as he thinks about those years of a subjugation of the people of Estonia to the Soviet very oppressive, unfree conditions imposed in that vast region, you would come to appreciate liberty more. And that's why I am very honored that he's one of our guests today. I want him to talk more about what it's like to live in a place that isn't free. Now, Belgian Ambassador Jean-Arthur Regibault, how is it that you are the ambassador from the great nation of Belgium to the United States?
Well, thank you, Congresswoman, for the honor to speak to you today and to your audience. First, just to locate Belgium on the map, I think that we can say we are a small country, but we are world famous for both beers and chocolates. also, our capital city is Brussels. That is well known to many people because we host both the North Atlantic Alliance and the European Union in our capital city. We are surrounded by five countries, Germany, France, Luxembourg, Netherlands, and across the channel, just 60 kilometers away, Great Britain. Why did I become a diplomat? Well, first, I was born from a Belgian father, French-speaking, and a Swiss mother, German-speaking. So I had the international dimension already in me from the very beginning, visiting the family in both countries and traveling across Europe. And unlike a Christian, I have had the chance to be born in a country that was free, but that had been injured several times throughout history by terrible wars. And that certainly marked the life of my father in particular. So my father was born in 1915, so during World War I, when our country was occupied by the German Empire. And his first name was Albert, not by happenstance, because Albert was the name of our king at the time. And the king had decided to resist invasion by the German Empire. And so indeed, Belgium was also supported by the United States, for example, by the Hoover Foundation, because the people suffered heavily from the fighting. But also during World War II, when Belgium was again invaded by Nazi Germany, my father decided to resist. He was a partisan. And after 2 years, he was cuffed by the Gestapo and was sent to concentration camps. And that's something very important to tell an American audience. He was freed 3 years later from the Nazi concentration camp in Dachau by the 7th U.S. Army. And so actually, I owe my very existence to the fact that American soldiers came to defend freedom in Europe. And so you can imagine also that it gave me a strong sense of what liberty means.
Well, that's quite a story. I know both of you have stories. We want to hear more about your stories. And I was thinking in our country, to give the students who are listening a reference point, here we have this vast continent called North America. And if you look back at our history, in terms of our largest trading partner, Canada, to our north, there were battles even in between Ohio and the then the America of many centuries ago, where there were battles between the British and the French and the Native Americans for the Battle of Lake Erie, which my congressional district spirals across, and but it was finally settled. It wasn't as bloody as the wars in Europe as borders were decided. If we look at the settlement of Texas, California, Arizona, areas in our southwest, there were battles with Mexico. So unfortunately, I guess it's common when continents were established that there be these struggles for territory between different interests. Issues of Native Americans in our country and of former slave land holdings and so forth are still an issue to this very day. But I would like to talk a little bit, and maybe you can exchange between each other. What did it feel like for your parents and you, Ambassador Preet, growing up in Estonia? What does it feel like? What happens when you don't live in a place that's free?
The people that stayed in Estonia, like my grandparents, like my parents when they were born, they lived under constant fear, constant threat of repressions, only because they may have thought or said something different from what was tolerated or accepted by the Soviet Communist Party or the Soviet Soviet government. So, for example, my mother, who was born in 1952, she told me that that every time there was a sound of trucks driving past their house in the small town in Estonia, her mother had my mother and her sister hidden somewhere in their home, because there was such a high fear that that these trucks may signal another wave of deporting people to Siberia, that this was always something that people were afraid of. They tried to hide their relatives, their loved ones, and this was at the time when the economy in Western Europe and the United States was already booming, when people really felt that the war was way past us, and people were able to go ahead with their lives, but in the Soviet Union, in the conditions of oppression, this never got really better until we regained independence again.
And, you know, I'll say thank you, Mr. Ambassador, so much for those personal stories that are so very important to understanding how the world makes progress, that you learned and never forgot. You didn't walk away from the challenge of peace and of democracy. You walked right toward it in your own life. And what a credit to you and to the sacrifices of your family and so many thousands and thousands and thousands of others who never had that opportunity. The other day I was in one of the towns that I represent, one of the counties I represent, Lorain County, and a gentleman who had immigrated to the United States from Poland, who operates a company called Skylift, a very successful company, began to talk about how he came to America, and he talked about coming into New York Harbor and seeing the Statue of Liberty, and here this crusty businessman, you know, who's of age now, he just broke down. And he said how much it meant to see that, because he knew what it was like to live in a place that had no freedom, that had no liberty. I want to ask a Belgian ambassador, Reggie Bo, what about yourself? What about you talked about World War One. I want you to go into a little bit about the unsettlement on the continent of Europe. And in our country, the most costly war to date is not a foreign war. We've been involved in many foreign wars, but the most costly war in this country was our own civil war, where North and South fought one another over the issue of whether or not the horrendous system of slavery would be extended from the South to the West. and we lost over 600,000, 700,000. In those days, they didn't even count very well. Americans during the 1800s, the middle part of the century. But what about Belgium? I've traveled to Europe. I've walked Flanders Field. I've walked to the American graves in Belgium to pay respects. My own family fought in Europe for the freedom of your country, France, England. Could you talk a little bit about your continent, your country, and some of the struggles that it has faced on the continent of Europe? We are now proud to be allies with your country, with the Baltic countries, in the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, a security umbrella of democracy-loving countries. And we are all united in that effort. And we have U.S. soldiers deployed to Europe right now, assuring that NATO strengthens and continues. So could you talk a little bit about the history of Belgium for our audience?
Yes. If you look at the map of Europe, historically, Belgium actually is pretty much in the center. And not surprisingly, because we have borders with France, Germany, the Netherlands, and the UK on the other side, and we have been a territory for centuries, symbolizing the struggle for domination in Europe, in particular in Western Europe. So we have had wars, many more wars than any part of Europe. If you put on the map a dot for every major battle fought in the last four centuries, there is a heavily concentration on the territories that is now Belgium. And if you want just a few examples, you mentioned one of them, Flanders Field, but just think of Waterloo. Waterloo is 15 kilometers south of Brussels. The Battle of the Bulge was also fought on Belgian territory. So we know what war means. And to be frank with you, we don't like wars because we know what comes with it, a lot of sufferings and destruction. And so Belgium has been occupied by different empires so for centuries, be it Spain, Austria, France, the Netherlands, Germany, and there is, I would say, an ingrained distrust vis-a-vis any type of power in Belgium. We want to be our own masters, and that's what it means to us to be free, so that we can decide about our own fate. Now, with World War I and particularly World War II, it came to a total disaster. The whole of Europe was destroyed, save for Britain in World War II. And I think that it led to a realization among many Europeans that we just had chosen the wrong way and that there is no way anyone can dominate this continent. And rather than fight each other, we should work together. And that was the conclusion after World War II, taken by six countries, so France and Germany, obviously, but also Italy and the three Benelux countries. And we decided that we don't want to go to war anymore. And so we pooled our resources, including the resources to wage war, like steel and coal. And we decided now, from now on, we're going to work together. And it's going to be much better for us in terms of peace, but also in terms of prosperity. And that's how the EU was born. And indeed, so you can say that the EU is a direct result of all the wars we have fought across centuries. And we Belgians are very proud to be to host the capital of this union that is geared towards peace, but also prosperity and friendly relations with the rest of the world, while still being very proud and strongly defending our values.
Thank you. Those relationships are so very important, and they obviously extend globally. So what Europe has done in cooperation with allies around the world who believe in liberty and understand the costs of not being free are new in the world, really, in terms of history. If you look at the struggles in other nations and the migration of hundreds of thousands of people from places that are not free, even here in our own hemisphere from Latin America, what's happening in South America, for example, now. Just extreme disruption, both for political reasons as well as climactic reasons. There is just a lot of unsettlement. And so the European example and the alliances that have been formed with freedom-loving people across the world hold hope that the world has institutions that can help us move into a different, more peaceful future. I wanted to ask you both about the influence of a country that is not free, Russia, and its malign influence across Europe, but I also, and the world, and what you see on that front, because obviously it's a very troubling set of developments, and we have to be aware. But I also want you to talk to the students who might be listening about how they should direct their own lives to be productive citizens, to make a difference in the world. Think a little bit how you'd advise your own children or grandchildren, and make sure and include that as we move forward here in this discussion. So talk a little bit about the face of the threats that you see today. What do those look like?
It is true that that we have experienced for years something that can be called as malign influence that spreads from economic affairs to issues of information space to meddling in Estonian local politics and so on and so forth. I think the background of that or why this is happening is just that the current Russia or the current Russia's government is not happy with the sort of setup of the world right now, or the way the international relations work for them, and for some strange reason, at least for me, it's a strange reason. They have decided to use instead of more sort of cooperation and trying to work together with other countries, they have chosen to use the path whereby they are trying to create tensions in other societies, free and liberal societies, or use the existing tensions and existing splits within these other societies to their benefit. So this influence may manifest itself in very different methods. Sometimes it's banning certain Estonian products or Latvian or Lithuanian or I don't know Belgian products from their market. Sometimes it's about harassing certain Estonian companies that are doing business in Russia, just you know, trying to find different reasons why this particular company is not desirable in this market. But it's also about spreading fake news. It's all also about cyber attacking computer systems that are so vital to the functioning of our societies these days. It's also about trying to bribe the politicians or support certain political parties by unfair means, or meddling in other countries' internal affairs by supporting certain political parties with money, with informational support, or so on and so forth. So this is the environment that we have to operate in, so to say. We have experienced it pretty much since we regained the independence. So sometimes the methods that we have experienced for 30 years are very new to our colleagues, let's say in Western Europe or America or even in other parts of the world. But we already have dealt with. I always emphasize the proper balance between the freedoms and responsibilities. I think this is something that is important when we talk about liberty, when we talk about free societies that defend the principles and values that are dear to our societies. That there are freedoms, and there are responsibilities in order to bring the society together from one to many, I pluribus unum. We need to make sure that everyone is eager to protect those freedoms and human rights and so on, so forth. But they are also eager to carry the responsibility that they have for the society, or even in a smaller scale, to their family, to their circle of friends, and so on and so forth. Thank you.
Thank you, Ambassador Preek, very much. As I was listening, and before I turned to Ambassador Regibo, I was thinking about our Constitution. Our U.S. Constitution would encourage the students to work with your teachers and go back and read the amendments to the Constitution, particularly the first 10, about freedom of assembly, freedom of speech, freedom of religion in the United States, and begin to understand more deeply what that really means and what it's like if it were to be taken away. I was one of the citizens that is elected, obviously, and was at the Capitol here in the United States on January 6th when we were invaded by a group of Americans who were quite rambunctious. And I sort of was sitting there because we couldn't get out, and there was a lot of damage occurring outside of the chamber where I was sitting. You could hear it. You could feel it as they banged on the doors and so forth. I thought, this is starting to feel like the captive nations. This is the sort of feeling like, you know, you're not free to express the will of your constituents who've sent you here to Washington to make the laws. We could not conduct business that day. We were disrupted for hours and hours and hours. And obviously, over 140 police officers were injured here in the Capitol. There was a shooting of a citizen who was attempting to do something very illegal in entering the building. And there were a lot of people who were harmed that day in many ways. So our freedom is fragile, and it's tested every single day. And we have to understand that there are legal ways to make your views heard, and then there are illegal ways that harm others. And we have to really walk that fine line every day in our own lives and the way that we conduct our affairs. So, Ambassador Regibo, you were an ambassador to Russia, and I've traveled there many times, and I feel so sorry for the people there. My first you can talk about all the sophisticated terms one can use for why people there do not have freedom, but it's grim. I found it grim as an American, and I thought, oh, I just hope that in modern times the people of that country can taste liberty at some point. But it was just so sad on every front. No respect for clean water or clean air, people getting illnesses, going into some of the so-called mental institutions and seeing people without the proper medicine just literally raging mad and yelling with no proper help. The limited numbers of goods on the shelves that people could afford. And yet when you quietly talk to people, they had a sense of humor. There was this cynical humor that would keep popping up all the time. I went into wards where women who were pregnant were about to deliver, and I saw the lack of medical equipment. I thought, oh my goodness. I was just shocked that a nation that is a nuclear nation could have so little for its own people. And so I'd be very interested in your experiences in Russia, any kind of advice you could give to the young people of our country. We're just so grateful for your participation today.
Yes, thank you. So obviously, the experience we have of Russia and Belgium is very different from the experience in Estonia. But just first to mention how important it is, freedom and security for our friends, is that first, we never recognized annexation of Estonia and Latvia and Lithuania by the Soviet Union in 1941. And so when these three countries became free again in 1991, it was just back to normal for us. Also, when the three countries joined NATO in 2004, the very first day, we sent our F-16 fighter jet above the Baltic sky, just to make the point. They are part of the club. And also, I come from a nation that, by and large, is a pacific country. We do not like war, but we do like liberty. And so it's also a point made by a small country. These are our friends. If you touch them, you also have to touch us. We are the same team. Talking of Russia, I think that my first job when I arrived there was to try to understand the country. Because we don't have the same historical depth. And I would say, just for a short summary, that I had a sad confirmation, but also a nice surprise. The sad confirmation is the way the political system works in Russia. It's totally different from ours. It's vertical. It's based on hierarchy. And whereas, for example, we civil servants from Belgium, we are educated to serve the people. In Russia, the opposite is true. The people are educated to serve power. When you say that Russia is not free, that's a statement that I would qualify, because many Russians still feel themselves at least partially free. Obviously, it's not a liberal democracy like ours. Actually, even the Kremlin speaks of a managed democracy, which means that, for example, when there is an opponent that is likely to get many votes, he would not be able to be a real candidate. But they have another way of apprehending the whole political system that is foreign to us. And this we have difficulty in understanding, which does not mean that Russians cannot express their opinions, because most of them, they can, until they become a threat for the so-called stability of the system. And so when you meet with the average Russian, they would speak their mind. And it's okay for the political system as long as they do not threaten to win elections. And for example, when I met Russian liberals, and there are some of them, they're probably not the majority, but it's estimated to be 20 or 25% of the population. When we asked them, how can we help you? Well, I remember vividly one answer I got was, fix your own home. I.e., you in the West, where you are the countries of liberal democracy, you are also not perfect. And please fix your own problem, because it will also have a positive impact on the Russian population. And so when we speak of, for example, the extreme right or the extreme left populist movement we also have in Europe, well, they were not invented by the Kremlin, but they are used by the Kremlin. The same with internet or cyber threat was not invented by the Kremlin, but it is used by the Kremlin. And we are sure that there are also steps we can take on our side to improve our own system, and it will be noticed everywhere in the world.
Thank you, Ambassador Regibo, very, very much. And Ambassador Preek, you've just been superb guests. Our time is coming to an end, but I want to say, first of all, thank you very much on behalf of the American people for taking time to do this broadcast today. Thank you both for speaking in English. I encourage all the students who are listening to take another language. Thank you all. And thank you for listening. And thank you to all the teachers who have made this dialogue possible.